Welcome to the Classic NBL podcast, the only podcast which asks the hard questions like, where in the world is Richie Edwards? I'm joined by Sam Garrick. And Sam, where in the world is Richie Edwards right now?
I've got no idea, absolutely no clue where Richie Edwards is. And but it's certainly a big question.
It is indeed, and that is the question we were posed by Canary Rams reporter Brendan Egan. And we've said, if you want to send in questions for this podcast, we'll let you know when we're recording for each team, and you can send in all your questions and queries. But Richie Edwards was playing in the Colombian First Division, and no one knew about it. He played about six games and averaged 13 points, five rebounds, shot 39% from the field and 25% from deep, and then got cut. Richie Edwards, of course, is one of the Kiwis playing overseas, or at least he was playing overseas, who used to play for the Canary Rams, and that is the team who we were going to be covering in this podcast. Last season, they went 13-5. They were top qualifiers. They reeled off six straight wins to make it into the playoffs as the number one seed, but then they were quite easily defeated by the Super City Rangers, 104-85 in the semi-final. Sam, how did you really rate the Rams' season last year? It was kind of the continuation of when Mark Dickell first started, and they've gotten better and better, and that was kind of a mark in their improvement, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess it culminated with the arrival of Mackenzie Moore. They were, I think, 3-3 or something around that level before their start in Port. Mackenzie Moore from last year arrived, obviously the MVP of the league, and he completely changed the complexion of that team last year. He came in and they sort of moved into an ISO-heavy, almost Cleveland Cavalier style offense, where they have two players dominating the ball, himself and Marcel Jones, and that allowed them to really score with the best of teams and set their defense. They were impressive in transition, a lot of young athletes and a lot of shooting on the floor, and they've almost doubled down on that this season, as I'm sure you'll allude to as we get further into the podcast.
Yeah, Mackenzie Moore really turned their season around last year. It was a kind of very strange up and down season. They had five imports throughout the year. They nearly lost to the Hawks. They needed two overtimes to beat the Hawks. But then later in the season, they beat the Saints by about 20, when I believe they were 10-point underdogs or $5 outsiders or something like that. So it was a really up and down campaign, as kind of ruled by availability and things like that. And then when they went into the semi-final against Super City, they were favourites for most people, but talking to Jeff Green before the game, I hope I'm not betraying any confidences here, but he was pretty convinced that the Rangers were going to beat the Rams. He knew he had the game plan to do so, and it was a disappointing end to the Rams season after all that.
Yeah, it was quite the time where Ethan Rusbatch and Marcel Jones to have both probably the worst games of their season. Ethan in particular was very disappointed with his performance in that semi-final, and I guess that just happens in a one-game series where a team comes out and they're a little bit shell-shocked. Mark Dickell spoke of the lack of experience of the squad and that they'd be better for that semi-final defeat. And with some of the core of the team returning, though not a ton of the complementary pieces, that experience from the semi-final will be interesting to see how it carries over into this season.
Yeah, we might as well start with how much Mackenzie Moore will be missed. I think he was one of the best players to ever play in the NBL. His statistics certainly would make that assessment sound accurate. He averaged 22 points per game, 6 rebounds, 8 assists and 3.4 steals. He shot 47% from the field and 37% from 3. He was just a stud on defense, a stud creator, a stud ball handler. He was just really an elite, elite player. And without him, the Rams, well, we'll get into it later when we look at their roster, but without him, I think the Rams are really going to struggle to find that production, to replace that production, and I think any team would really have a huge hole when Mackenzie Moore departs.
Yeah, and that was kind of shown in the final where I think he had something like 38-8-8 or something ridiculous in terms of statistical performance. One thing, though, talking to people from around the league and really watching Mackenzie, both in the NBL and in other leagues, as you can see, he really does hijack the offense in terms of the way that he plays, and it can be difficult for other players when they're in come out of a motion heavy offense to go into sort of spot up roles, and that had affected no one any more than Ethan Rusbatch, who was kind of started the season on fire and was kind of relegated into more of a spot up role, less ball handling and less creation opportunities than what he had at the start of the year. So I kind of expect a bounce back from Rusbach to fill some of that hole, and then it's just whether their more recent additions are able to fill the rest of that gap.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. McKenzie kind of had that James Harden role where he'd just dribble and create, and it was extremely efficient. But as you said, it kind of minimalized and marginalized some of the other players. Ethan Rusbach was the exact point I was going to make. He averaged 20 points through the first five or six games. Then he kind of slowed down after McKenzie Moore arrived. So while it was good, I think they'll kind of definitely have a lot less one-on-one creation, and they're going to have to replace that with a lot of spacing and a lot of smoothly run sets this season.
That's kind of what you'll expect to see. You'll expect to see less isolation, probably a little bit more ball movement, a little bit more player movement in order to create shots out of an offensive system rather than just the idea where McKenzie can break anyone down off the dribble and look to find a shooter. Basically, yeah, like you talked about with Harden, I know in Houston they teach basically when you catch it, you shoot it. And that was what the Rams system was when McKenzie didn't have the ball. So it'll be a lot more motion heavy, a lot more player movement heavy in order to create shots out of a system rather than just relying on individual talent.
Speaking of player movement, the Rams have possibly had the biggest off-season player movement in a long time. We'll go through their ins and outs. So in comes their two new imports, Jeremy Kendall and Will Neighbor. Torrey Smith-Milner comes back to the NBL after a few seasons away. And Hamish McDonald is kind of going to step up as their young guy moving down from the Waikato outs. And this will take me a while. So, Mackenzie Moore is gone. Xavier Shaw is gone. Toby Galuli is gone. Sean Nisbet is gone. Sam Lees is gone. Justin Graham is gone. Jamie Adams is gone. Gareth Dawson is gone. Desherick Gaudry is gone. Bede Masters may be gone. Inga Solofuti is probably gone. And Marcel Jones is maybe gone. So that leaves them with only five or six returning players. So there's almost not as much as we can read into last season and project it forward to this season.
Yeah, that being said, though, a lot of their minutes have returned. It's a loss of a lot of players, but those guys were kind of fringe players, and you can kind of see that with Mark Dickell. He likes to get young guys in, bring in new people to replace those little opportunities, those little 5 to 10 minutes a game around the team. And the real big addition outside of their imports is Torrey Smith-Milner, which you touched on.
It is inflated because of how many imports they had. So all five of their imports from last season are out the door. And a lot of the young bench guys who have gone off to college and some of the bench guys who didn't play that many minutes, the core kind of role players are still there. And obviously they've lost kind of their stars and their young guys off the bench. So the roster as we understand it, Jeremy Kendall, Ethan Rusbach, Marcus Alapati, Marcus Whippy, Will Neighbor, Quinn Clinton, Michael Carano will be here for half the season, Toby Smith-Milner, Josh Peterman, Hamish McDonald, and perhaps Marcel Jones is returning, and that'll be a key for the Rams if they can get him to come back. It is uncertain at this point. Looking at the starting five, if we assume at this point that Marcel Jones at least will not be there for the first game of the season, do you think we see Kendall, Rusbach, Alapati, Whippy, and Neighbor as the starting five?
Yeah, I guess that the choice there, whether you play Torrey Smith-Milner on the wing and probably lose some shooting and gain some more size, or whether you play Alapati at the two and bump Rusbach up to the three spot and sort of gain a lot of shooting and kind of sacrifice a little bit of size. That lineup that you mentioned probably makes a little bit more sense, but we did see Mark Dickell kind of mention that Torrey Smith-Milner might play a little bit of the three spot this season.
Maybe he's changed a lot since I last seen him, but he's a stretch four to me. This is, this bloody problem we have, where all the good stretch fours end up playing threes. Why does this keep happening?
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen that much on this team. I have Torrey Smith-Milner pegged as a four and probably even some five this season, and I'd love to see him there. Dickell had earlier talked about the value of spacing and their ability to move, get up and down the floor and a bit of versatility. And Torrey Smith-Milner as a four and a five really gives you all of that. So I'm excited to see what he can do as a big, not so excited to see what he can do on the wing.
Rebounding, I think, will be maybe a problem for this team, depending on whether Marcel Jones, I think all our analysis is going to be depending on whether Marcel Jones is back, to be honest. But rebounding, Marcus Whippy is good for his size, good for his position. Will Neighbor is kind of the interesting one here. He averaged 7 rebounds a game when he was playing in England, but he's not your traditional big center. He'll be going up against some big men who have some size and strength on him. Rush Batch rebounds a little bit for his position. Michael Corrine is not a great rebounder for the center spot. Toby Smith-Milner kind of, he's all right. There doesn't really seem to be a big, unless Marcel Jones, who averaged 9 rebounds a game last year, comes back. I think they might be beaten on the glass quite often against some of these bigger lineups.
Yeah, I think if Jones is there, they can get a lot of rebounding out of the wing. Like Kendall is probably a better rebounder for his position than average. Ethan Rusbatch can rebound if he's playing the two spot, as he rebounds like a 3. Marcel rebounds like a 4, and if he's playing the 3 spot. So you have guys that are all able to rebound sort of plus one position, and that will sort of make up for the lack of rebounding out of Tohi and Will Neighbor a little bit. The question is, though, is that are they able to make up for the rebounding of against really tall front lines where those rebounds aren't going all that far? Like guys like a front line like Alex Pledger and Nick Kay, are you able to just get Neighbor and Tohi to block them out while Marcel crashes the glass or Ethan crashes the glass? And if you're relying on rebounding from your wings, it means that you can't get out as fast in transition as the Rams would like.
Even teams like Taranaki with Aaron Badenoel and Daniel Gomez, and even Nelson, where they have kind of a big traditional rebounding center and then a good power forward, those two guys are probably going to have the advantage on the glass most of the time against the Rams. So there is going to be a big emphasis. And I think you raise a good point with Kendall, who in the SEABL averaged 7 rebounds a game. So he can certainly chip in from the guard position. But I think that is asking a lot of those 1 to 3 men.
I do think, though, that Dickell won't mind those wings getting in and grabbing those defensive rebounds. It allows them to grab and go. They have guys all over the place that can dribble. I know they were powered a lot by Whippy being able to grab and go on the glass last year. I think we will see a lot of those guard or wing rebounds this year being kind of a feature of the Rams, and maybe it's just more a story of Neighbor and Tohi just going and purely playing box out roles more than grabbing their share of rebounds themselves.
Let's talk about Jeremy Kendall, because I think he's the X factor on this team. Would you say he's probably going to play the point? I can't really see anyone else doing so.
Yeah, he's their one for sure. When you look at Jeremy Kendall, he was able to lead the most efficient offense in the league, in the Southeast Australian Basketball League, or the C-ball, as most people refer to it. And they were able to win a title last year. So he comes with a good pedigree in lower level Australasian basketball leagues.
Yeah, so Kendall played for the Brisbane Bullets in the ANBL. He came in as a kind of second half import, averaged 11 points, 3 rebounds and 2 assists. In the C-ball, he scored 27 points per game, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. He shot 48% from the field, 35% from 3 and 83% at the line. He shot 28% from 3 when he was with the Bullets. So he's an okay outside shooter without being locked down. But I see he being the main on-ball threat for the Rams, the main creative threat, only averaging 4 assists per game in the C-ball, which those stats, I believe the C-ball is a bit below the quality of the NZNBL. So take those stats and maybe downsize them a bit for what he's expected to do here. The one thing about, there's no real Mackenzie Moore average 8 assists per game, pounding the rock type of guy here. There's probably not going to be a main true point guard, so to say. He's probably going to be more of a scoring guard. And that's why I think that they're going to have to rely on their sets and their spacing perhaps more than a main creative hub per se this season.
Yeah, the term that I've been using is creation by committee. I think that they're going to be able to get shot creation from sort of a few spots. But yeah, you're right. There might be situations where they're running sets with Alapati on the ball and Kendall's able to sort of turn an advantage once he's come off a screen, as opposed to him just, you know, dribbling down into a high pick and roll, as Mackenzie Moore was able to do last year. They'll have guys like Quinn Clinton come in and facilitate the offense where their scoring guys like Kendall and Rusbetch or and Alapadia and Marcel Jones, if he's there, are coming off of screens, that'll be the way that they do it, as opposed to, yeah, like you said, just a one guy pounding the rock. I'm excited to see what Kendall can do, though, in the league. He's going to be he's an interesting player and somebody who was obviously so valuable in a lower league beforehand. It'll be a good test case of the relative strengths of the Seabowl versus the NZNBL.
Yeah, he was the top scorer in the Seabowl. Do you kind of envision him as a 20-point scorer? He maybe could be in the contest for one of the leading scorers in the league this season, especially considering most of his big men can shoot. So that'll open up some space on the perimeter for him to get into the lane and get to work.
The player I guess I would compare him to would probably be Ray Cowles from last year, would be my real player who I think he's going to emulate. He might not be 100% of what Cowles was, but I assume he's going to play sort of in that role, or maybe Eric Devendorf, a player like that that's going to come in and just be a genuine microwave offensively. I asked for a scouting report from friend of the pod at Crunch Time Shots on Twitter. He's an avid Seabowl fan and a real fan of Australian basketball in general. He said that that Kendall's definitely extremely aggressive with the ball in hand and is strongly built, so and sort of likes to post up smaller guards. So that'll be an opportunity where he's able to, you know, do that in the NZNBL, where we do have quite a few smaller guards at the one spot.
Possibly the second scoring threat from the perimeter to the Canterbury Rams would be Ethan Rusbatch. Last season, he averaged 14 points, 4 rebounds and 2 assists and a steal per game. Started off the season averaging 20 as kind of 1A scoring hub behind Marcel Jones, and then he slowed down when Mackenzie Moore arrived. So he only ended up shooting 42% from the field and 28% from three. His career numbers are better than that, so expect probably an uptick this season. And he's had a season with the Breakers in which he should have improved and gotten a lot of experience. So I expect a good season from Ethan Rusbatch this season. Add in his always solid perimeter defense, and I think he's going to be, once again, a pretty strong contributor for this Rams side.
Yeah, you've got to think he's sort of up there in the mix for NZ, or sort of a fringe contender for NZ Guard of the Year, a guy who can come in and play defense, shoot threes, and then, yeah, give you a little bit of shot creation in terms of, you know, coming off of a secondary action. He's not the kind of guy that's going to run a primary action pick and roll, but if teams are going to load up on one side of what Kendall's doing on one side, you swing the ball to the other side and Rusbatch is able to come downhill and score on that other side. He shoots it, he handles okay, he's able to post up smaller guys. He's just a pretty versatile scorer that's able to give you good solid defense on the other end. He's a really valuable NBL player.
And he can cover both the shooting guard and the small forward position, but you expect him to mainly play at the small forward when Marcus Alapati's on the court, but then he can switch to two when they want to play those bigger lineups?
Yeah, especially if Marcel Jones is there, you'd think that he's going to start at the two guard, but without Jones, then he's probably going to be their nominal three-man most of the time. They're a little bit short on the wing without Marcel Jones, but if Jones is there, then that's a really potent two and three combination between Ethan and Marcel.
One of the things you'll notice in every preview podcast is things like this, where I say, and Ethan Rusbatch is probably in the mix with all those other guys for a tall black spot as well.
Yeah, yeah. A first-time tall back from last year, where the coaches were very, very impressed with what he was able to do in the first half of the season. They were a little bit disconcerted by his drop-off down the stretch, but as we said earlier, you can kind of explain some of that through role. And I know he's been working pretty hard with the Breakers in the off-season. He is a hard trainer, so you have to think there is going to be a little bit of improvement for this season.
The ANBL off-season, Buddy Breakers, who are the off-season. This is going to be a running theme, I think. Anyone who played, Jeremy Kendall, he had a good off-season with the Brisbane Bullets. So really, I think these guys should have managed to get into form during the off-season and should be rearing to go for the actual season proper with the NBL.
Yeah, it's great to see them going out and playing some competitive basketball while they're off work.
Exactly. And so, Rusbatch, you are quite right about how there's not that much depth on the wing without Marcel Jones there, because Marcus Alapate is going to, speaking of off-seasons, Marcus Alapate has had a big one, and he's probably going to get some increased minutes either the two or the three. Last season, he averaged 10 points per game. He chipped in with 2 rebounds and 2 assists. He shot 108 threes, and that's what he brings to this team. He shot 41% from deep. He's a good shooter at the line. He doesn't get to the line as often, but that's because his role is to gun away. He had a 25-point game last season where he hit 7 threes, and he had, I think, a 23-point game where he hit 6 threes. And throughout the offseason, he's been in Canterbury for most of it. He's been having a big offseason, and you suspect he might be able to do a little bit more off the dribble as well as being still the 3-point threat that he was last year.
Yeah, talking to Marcus throughout the off-season, I spent a little bit of time with him at a couple of coaching camps. And yeah, he's excited with what the season is upcoming. And you see off of his college film, he was able to sort of get to the rim a little bit and is able to get to his one dribble pull-up and do a little bit off the bounce. Last year, he was, I guess, relegated to just purely being a spot-up shooter. But without Mackenzie Moore on the team and the creation by committee mantra that the Rams will be employing, I think you might see Alapade just sort of take a little bit more shot creation into his hands throughout the season. One of the issues that they had in that semi-final was a lot of stuff they ran was just for Alapade threes. Teams just were able to take that away in the semi-final. So the Rangers were able to take that away, and when they did, the Rams were kind of a little bit worried. So I'm sure they'll be looking to counter that by building in packages where Alapade is able to just catch and go off the 3-point line as opposed to just pulling the trigger right away.
And with Neighbor on board and Toby Smith-Milner and Marcus Whippe can shoot some long twos, I think he'll have a little bit more space to operate in this year as well.
Yeah, they might be the best 3-point shooting team in the league, possibly, when you consider that all five, if Marcel Jones is there, all five of their starters are able to shoot it. Kendall's a good shooter, Russ Batch is a good shooter, Marcel can shoot it. Torhei Smith-Milner's a little bit scratchy from outside, but he can shoot it. He can shoot the three. And Will Neighbor is supposedly a very good 3-point shooter, who we'll talk about later, off the bench. And then you've got the two best young prospects in terms of shooting in the country with Hamish McDonald and Quinn Clinton, and then Marcus Alapati, who's possibly the best shooter in the entire league. So I'm kind of excited to see what the Rams are able to do in terms of their 3-point shooting and how that unlocks the middle of the floor for guys like Kendall and Russ Batch to get to the rim.
So we'd expect Alapade to probably shoot around 40% from three. We think that's fairly consistent. Do you think he might up his points per game from, say, 10 to maybe in the 13, 14 range? And this may be a bold prediction, but could we see a 30-point game from him this season where he has the Luke Gaston game where he just goes nuts and perhaps even a few more 20-point games than last season where he can really give the Rams a spark and turn a few games which could be losses into wins with some hot shooting?
Yeah, he is a genuine microwave in terms of his ability to score the ball. I'm excited to see what he can do. I do think you will see a slight uptick in scoring. And yeah, like you said, he's kind of a lock to shoot in that high 30s or in the 40s in terms of 3-point percentage. Just and not only just is he able to have a high percentage, but he gets him off too. He's a real gunner in terms of the way that he shoots the three ball.
Yeah, so 108 threes last season. If I do the quick math now, that's in between five and six a game. You'd expect something similar, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's in 20 minutes a game or whatever it was last year. That's a lot of threes getting him up. So I think he might maybe take a little bit less on a per minute basis, but with an uptick in minutes, you probably expect to see around about the same number of 3-point attempts.
Defensively, what's your scout on him? He's probably not quite as good as Kendall and Rosbach.
He's just so small. He's so speedy that he's able to do a little bit on defense, but just, he's I don't know what he's listed at, but he's probably 5'10", really, maybe 5'11". So he's not able to give you all that much in the way of post-up defense, so he can get a little bit abused on that end. But he does scrap defensively and is smart. He does know where to be. It's just that his size kind of prohibits him from being a real genuine plus defender.
And in the tradition of labeling guys as good guys, Marcus Alapade is one of the good guys. I believe he bought me a drink at the Final Four without even knowing who I was. So a real top bloke as well.
Yeah, I saw him. I've seen him a few times outside of basketball, and yeah, he is a real good dude.
So another player who'll be returning for the Canberra Rams is Marcus Whippe. He has been with Mark Dickell for a long time. He started with the Nuggets, I think, in 2014. He played one game and then tore his ACL, but he moved up to follow Dickell to the Rams. Last season, he averaged 9 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, shot 58% from the field and 59% from the line. And he averaged 2 steals a game as well. And I think we're just going to see more of the same from him this season. I think he'll probably be in the 20-minute-ish range again. He doesn't have any athleticism, so there'll be a lot of layups and close shot contests. He just got a little bit of a shot. He can step outside slightly. Really good hands defensively. He's not the biggest guy, and he fights on the boards for his size. So is there really anything about Marcus Whippe which people who haven't seen him in the past 2 years would be surprised by this season?
Yeah, you mentioned his lack of athleticism, and that actually comes about. It wasn't his ACL that he tore, it was his Achilles. And ever since there, he just hasn't been able to jump. He gets made fun of at practice for not being able to dunk the ball, which is an interesting thing for their nominal center, really. And that's where Whippe is best. His ability to dribble really just gives the Rams just something different. A 4 or 5 man that's able to do things off the dribble is a real function of New Zealand basketball. Mika Vekona, Aaron Bailey, Noel, guys of this ilk that are able to do stuff off the dribble, run high handoffs, and basically run the breaker action that everybody in the league runs. That's just a real feature of New Zealand basketball, and that's what makes Whippe sort of so valuable, is that dribbling ability and his speed. He's kind of the It's not fair because he kind of looks like Draymond Green, but he's the New Zealand Draymond Green,
Well,
in that sense.
I was actually going to make a worse comparison. There's nothing I love more than a cross-racial comparison, but really he's kind of the same as Mika Vekona. He's got a lot of those traits, those dribble handoffs, and he'd be the perfect guy, I think, in the Tall Blacks. You can imagine Paul Henare or Nenad Vucinic running these sets through the center or power forward who's giving all these handoffs, and the foreign commentators just getting really confused about how it keeps working. Like, he's really in that mold.
He's exactly like that, but he just plays super hard, and that's kind of a reason why he can't play more than that 20 or 25 minutes a game. Is he just plays so hard. I guess he's so gassed by the time that he's sprinted up and down the floor a million times, because he's a big dude too, very stocky. That's what allows him to sort of rebound and defend up above his height, bulk, and so shifting all that weight around makes it pretty tough on him to play more minutes.
Does he also have that Mika Vekona theory where, because he's diving around so much, it kind of gives off the impression that he may be a better defender than he is? Because there is a limitation to, if you can't jump and you can't protect the rim, then there is some limit to what you can achieve as a 5. But I'd expect that him and Neighbor and Smith Milner and Carina will all probably switch between the 5 and the 4, and there is some switchability both defensively and offensively in the big man rotation.
Yeah, Whippy's got good feet, which allows him to be, good on defense. And he's the kind of guy where if you go to the rim, he's certainly going to contest the shot. He'll get into good position and isn't afraid of sort of getting up and taking a hit to the chest. He's a good vertical defender. But yeah, like you say, his lack of height and lack of length and lack of jumping ability after the Achilles injury just means that he isn't able to be sort of that top flight, just absolute anchor on defense. Marcus Wilby also has probably induces the most lane violations in the league, with the ugliest free throw stroke in the entire league. Oh, I guess not ugly, most interesting free throw stroke in the entire league. Guys think that he's going to shoot it, and then he puts it above his head, and then he moves it into one hand before flicking the ball. And I guess that's how he shot 59% on free throws last year, because he probably shot 40%. He just got that many chances to retake his second one that he was able to make it after a while.
I didn't notice that, but to continue our weird comparisons, that's the Jermaine O'Neal thing where he just held it for so long that everyone kind of burst into the lane.
Yeah, Whippy's an absolute master of it. I don't think he does it on purpose, but it's just something that kind of happens with his free throw stroke.
So Whippe will be in the front court most of the time, alongside Will Neighbor, who is one of the more interesting imports we've had in a long time. He comes out from England. Usually you get them from the USA or Australia. He played at Little Rock, which is in the Sun Belt Conference. Not a great conference, but it's still D1. And when he was there, he averaged 16 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, and 1 block in his senior season. Shot 50% from the field, 38% from 3, 77% from the line. He then played in Surrey, in England, where he averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, and 0.7 blocks, where he shot 46%, 38% from 3, and 81% from the line. He's a very interesting player in that they've gone and got a shooter at the big man position, which you don't see very often. and he's very intriguing. He's kind of almost the English version of Rob Lowe, where he's a floor spacer. He's probably not going to be a huge rebounder, but he's going to be more of an offensive threat. And it seems like watching the limited film and looking at his steal and block rates, it seems like he could potentially be good enough defensively and at the rim to be a deterrent there, and definitely not a net minus.
The comparison to Rob Lowe is pretty good, if not, even though it's not cross-racial, which is something that we aim for. When he's there, he'll be fine. Like, he's guys struggle, they just don't encounter that much length in the NBL. They're not used to playing, or especially the local guys just aren't used to playing against guys that big. And Neighbor is certainly big. I think he's 6'10". And when he's at the rim, he's going to be fine. It's just his feet are a little bit slow, and you kind of see that on the defensive end. So I assume teams are going to try and put him in pick and roll. And if he's playing out there, if they ever go with the twin towers of him and Karina at the same time, then it's just going to be a pick and roll frenzy with those two that are kind of slow of foot and will struggle to move around and defend that. I am interested in Neighbor though, and this is a very cool signing. It's going to make the Rams an interesting team to watch.
I'm very intrigued for Mark Dickell's lineups, especially in the front court. This seems like it could be something for Ben Sheet and Caleb Harrison to be tracking throughout the season, lineup plus minus, because Neighbor could really work on offense. He could have that Rob Lowe effect, where even though through the most part of the season the Breakers were pretty poor and they had a losing record, but Rob Lowe led the league in plus minus per minute. And that's because his shooting ability for such a big man and at the five position, it gave all the other players so much space that it made the Breakers just so much more of a threat offensively. So whether they can find the right lineups offensively without giving up too much defensively, I think at least to start the season, there could be some real mixing and matching, some real changing up of the lineups, and perhaps one game Whippy gets 30 minutes, then one game he gets 10 minutes as they try to figure out what's going to be the best, because there's a lot of opportunities here.
Pick and pops with a five man is just an absolute cheat code. It's not really, when you're trying to coach against it, you just don't even know what to do. There's no real solution to defending a pick and pop with a five that can shoot it. So Neighbor is just an interesting asset in that sense. Offensively, he loves to shoot bank shots, which is pretty cool as well. He from the post, he loves to go to the bank shot. I don't know whether teams will be a little bit frustrated that he makes so many bankers, but in his highlight film, there were just so many of them. He does like to go to the post and will try and take smaller defenders there and will just shoot right over them. As you mentioned earlier, he's got a pretty good field goal percentage for somebody who does shoot a lot of jumpers. So Neighbor is possibly the most interesting import to come into the league for a long time.
To continue our annoyingly racial comparisons, he's somewhat like Matt Rogers in terms of the skill set and what they wanted from Matt Rogers. He can probably provide a bit of that, but they'll be hoping just a little bit more work on the glass and perhaps a little bit more toughness.
Yeah, I think so. And the thing about Neighbor and his rebounding rate, and you often see this, is that the total rebounding rate isn't the thing that you should look at when you have a center that shoots it, because they just can't get on the offensive glass. It's impossible. If you're playing pick and pop all the time, you're not going to be able to go down and get it on the offensive glass. So his offensive rebounding rate is pretty poor, but his defensive rebounding rate is fine. I think he will give you a little bit more toughness than the average big white stiff that, everybody stereotypes these sorts of guys into. So I think the defensive rebounding rate of Will Neighbor will be a key, and that's probably the most nerdy sentence I've
I was
seen
going
in
to
a long
say,
time.
who else would say something like that? That could possibly be like another quote for the podcast graphic. Like, that is going very, very inside. It might be even more niche than our Tom Cowie and Jordan Lindbaum analysis.
Yeah, Will Neighbor defensive rebounding rate. That's a sentence that you wouldn't hear out of many people in New Zealand.
The Rams won't really be a team who should go after the offensive glass. It's one of my favorite theories that unless like the Sharks should probably go after offensive rebounds because they're going to get a lot of them with Pledger and Kay. But for most teams, I think it just ruins your transition defense so much. And with a lot of shooting, I don't think they'll necessarily need to crash the glass. Maybe they can send one guy to go do it. Maybe when Karina's in the game, he can do a lot of it. But overall, I think just getting back in transition, that may help the Rams defense. If they start going after offensive rebounds after being spaced out to the perimeter, it might cause some leaks in their transition defense.
Yeah, one of the good things is that statistically, 3-point shots or jumpers from the outside is harder to get out and transition against. It kind of seems counterintuitive, but when you think about it, if a guy goes to the rim and misses, then you know he's going to be taken out of play. He's so deep on the court that it's so easy to get back in. It's much harder to get back in transition. Whereas you know if these guys are shooting from deeper, it's just way better to get back in transition. It's way easier to get back in transition. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think they should eschew the offensive glass to worry about their defensive transition.
Let's go to the bench now, and we'll continue with the big men, and we'll start with Michael Carina, who is in Spain and is expected to arrive when that season ends, and that'll be mid-season in the NBL, so he can be a boost when he arrives. He averaged 8 points per game and 4 rebounds per game. He shot 52% from the field and 58% from the line. He got caught up to the Tall Blacks, and that was mainly because every single other centre in New Zealand was out injured or unavailable. But he was actually reasonably good. He had that game, I think, against China or a China select team in a warm-up where he shot 9 of 9 from the field, and that was kind of an awakening to show that this guy is a real threat in the post, and he could potentially have some value as he continues. And he did well to get a European gig in 3rd Division Spain, where James Hunter played. And I think overall it'll be very interesting to see if that has improved him when he comes back. He'll probably have a bigger role than his 20 minutes or so last season. But I think still, defensively, you probably couldn't put him and Whippy on the floor together because they're not the biggest athletes defensively and they're not the greatest rim protectors.
I think Carina, his feet are just pretty slow. And, you know, you can try as hard as you can, but if you can't move your feet on, you're just going to get put in pick and rolls all the time. And teams have noticed that. And now that the scout's out on him, it could be tough for Carina, both offensively and defensively. He does love to go to his left shoulder, turn over his left shoulder and shoot that righty jump hook. Certainly his favorite move in the post, and doesn't love to spin back to his left. Defensively, like I said earlier, just slower foot. And yeah, they're going to have to sort of think about the pairings that they put him with. Are they able to put him with Torhi Smith-Milner or go small with Marcel Jones at the four in order to get enough foot speed out their perimeter? I think he's able to give you good effort on the glass, which is handy for this team where rebounding won't be a real strength. But yeah, I'm interested in Carina's development, if only because, you know, we are lacking those sort of big men. Although, you know, we do have guys coming out of college that are going to be in that mix for Tall Blacks slots later on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Will Carina ever play for the Tall Blacks again? Because he was kind of a bolter in the team, and he was in there because Pledge was out, Jack Salt was out, Tywin Yard couldn't play, Stephen Adams couldn't play, Sam Wardenberg's over in college, Sam Timmons is over in college, at the four spot, Matt Freeman's over in college. There's so many centres coming through, and there are still so many centres available that he's probably going to be well down the ranks when the full-strength side is available. But again, he's kind of the guy in the mix with the NZ Select sorts of Benny Anthony and players like that who could potentially slot in when the team isn't at full strength.
Yeah, he's certainly got good size and has got really good offensive touch around the basket. So he does have a skill set there, and I'm excited to see if he can just keep working on that. He's been putting up some okay numbers in Spain offensively. Obviously, we're not getting footage of that, but when he comes back over here, yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do.
Cross-racial comparison, is he kind of, for people who haven't seen him, is he the Al Jefferson of the NBL? It does seem like his offensive skill set would be able to work if he could have a long mid-range shot or a stretch out to a three-point shot. That seems like something we should add a real bow to his game.
Carina is sort of best used off the bench as a post-up hub, a guy who can attack second unit centres when, you know, the smaller local guys come in. That's who Carina can really do some damage against, and that's where you can get a bit of shot creation when, you know, you're having Jeremy Kendall rest. So I'd like to see that utilised quite a bit, and that's something that Al Jefferson, and you're seeing a ton in the NBA now, Al Jefferson, Greg Monroe for the Bucks, probably the best example of it, where post-up big men are relegated to the second unit, but then they get the ball a ton with the second unit.
Coming off the bench alongside Carina, depending on Mark Dickel's lineups, will be Torhi Smith-Milner, who was one of the guys I was highest on a few seasons back. He had a season with the Super City Rangers where he came into the lineup late in the second half of the season. He averaged 14 points per game and he shot 51% from the field, 42% from three, 75% at the line. Then he went over to, he tried to go to New Mexico. I think he ran into some academic issues, so he went to a junior college where he absolutely destroyed the whole league. He was just absolutely superb over there. He decided to end up not going to college. He came back to be a development player at Melbourne, where he's played 40 minutes over the last two seasons. Overall, he's a guy, as we said before, he can play, he's a great stretch four. He's got so much defensive potential. He can shoot. He's got a great offensive game. He can play small ball centre if you need. Overall, I'm still really high on him, but this is kind of the season where if he averaged 14 points per game like 3 years ago now, I think he needs to kind of show the same promise off the bench if he wants to continue his development and potentially be a full-time NBL player in the future.
Yeah, basically the way that we're talking about this big man rotation for the Rams, there's just a lot of guys kind of at the same level, Whippy and Torhi and Michael Carina. All of these guys kind of, we're looking for somebody to stand out, looking for somebody to really, show that they're worth more than 20 minutes a game, show that they're worth 28 minutes a game. And Torhi Smith-Milner might be the best bet for that. If he's able to come, I'd really like to see him get an extended run this year. I'm sure Mark Dicker has got a pretty good relationship with him in order to bring him in down to Canterbury. And he's been training with Melbourne the last two off seasons. Once again, there we go, off season. So yeah, I think he does have a super high ceiling. Was obviously a great player in school. I believe won an NBL championship when he was still in school with the Auckland Pirates. I'd like to see Torhi come out and really shine in his return to the league.
I believe he won a national title with Rosmini as well. But I remember watching him for the Tall Blacks in Tauranga, and this would have been in 2014. So if you can be a Tall Black 3 years ago, he's kind of almost done what we think Carina might do. There's so many big men coming through that Carina will have a tough time regaining his spot in the team. Torhi Smith-Milner kind of went down that path as well. But really, like, as a comparison for him, like, he can kind of give you what Benny Anthony's been giving you the last few seasons, I think. If he reaches his potential, like, he could be possibly the third or fourth leading scorer on this team if Marcell Jones isn't around. Like, I think he's that good, but really we just haven't seen it the past few years because he's been overseas or with Melbourne. I think I might have said Kendall was the X factor earlier. Really, he's the X factor because he could give you starting minutes. He could give you, as you said, 25 to 30 minutes a game if he really performs, or we may not be able to continue to build on that promise. So really, I'm not really sure what to expect from Smith-Milner, but he's one of the guys I'll be watching intently to see how he goes because I've got really high hopes from Smith-Milner.
Yeah, me too. I've got written down that I think that Torhi is the real X factor. Also at the rim, helping out, I think he can block some shots. He can be that rim protection presence from the four spot. He's just so long and so big that yeah, he's able to give you a little something sort of Leon Henry ability to shoot threes and block shots. That's an ultra rare combination for a guy, and he's still so young. I mean, he's just got a world of potential, and he's one of the players I'm most excited to see. The thing, I guess, when discussing all of the Rams, and you look at it holistically, is that when we discuss the Giants, we talked about the drop-offs to just local guys that aren't able to do anything when they're plugged into the team, and what a real damper that puts on the team. The Rams just aren't going to experience that. They just have too many guys that can give you anywhere between 15 and 30 minutes a game, and they're going to be fine. Like, there's not going to be a horrendous drop off. So that's kind of the theme with the Rams this year, I feel.
Yeah, I think Smith-Milner has found himself a good place where he will have the opportunity to shine. If he ended up in Wellington or Southland, he could have been a 10-minute per game guy on the bench. If he played for Nelson or Taranaki, he'd probably play 30 minutes a game. He'd be locked in for that. So there is a bit of flux there. I'm still probably not as high as you on the Rams bench. Carina and Smith-Milner, well, half a season of Carina and Smith-Milner, I think is good. If they don't have Marcell Jones, then we're looking at a lot of young guys, and from eight onwards, it's certainly better than some of the benches in the league, but it's certainly not going to have the proven talent of some of the other ones. Could be a lot riding on young guys, depending on how the roster eventually shakes out.
Yeah, I guess that was probably with the assumption with that Marcell will play in my head. If they have Marcell, they go eight deep of guys that could, can start in the NBL. So that's that's a real strong platform to have in terms of not experiencing drop-off, or at sort of 7.5 if you consider Karina having a half season. Without Marcel, there's a big difference between 6.5 and 7.5. And like you say, you know, you can get away with just playing seven guys. Can't really get away with just playing six guys. Or like you sort of alluded to earlier, that there might be a bit of a reliance on some of these young guys.
Yeah, if there's no Marcel, we're looking at Kendall, Rustvatch, Alapate, Whippy, Neighbour, Toby Smith-Milner to start the season. And then we're into Quinn Clinton as the seventh man. While there's a lot of potential with Quinn Clinton, he showed some good promise last season. I guess we can start talking about him now. He's not a lock to be an NBL-level contributor just yet. I think he will be, but it's not for sure.
Yeah, you've got to think, like, is he any better than Ellie Granger at this point? Maybe, maybe not. We're not 100% sure. Like, last season he certainly wasn't anyway. You know, he was still a high school kid then. He's had a lot of basketball between last NBL season and this NBL season. But, you know, these dudes are young, and young guys don't often play that well in the NBL. Clinton might be important for them. He's certainly going to have their first shot at the backup point guard position with sort of older players like Marty Davison deciding to concentrate on refereeing. And there might be a little bit on Quinn's shoulders if Mark Dickel doesn't really trust Alapate to play the one spot when Kendall's out.
Yeah, there could be a lot on his shoulders. I think there should be. Like, kind of what we talked about last episode, where he played 44 minutes last season, but he's going to be the New Zealand point guard of the future, even if he has to go through some learning pains during the season. I think you give him that backup point guard role and you give him a consistent role, go at it, and you just see and try and develop him for when he goes over to college, because this Mark Dickel certainly believes that he can be New Zealand's point guard of the future. I certainly think he's the best point guard prospect we have. I say let him go, give him a consistent role in the team and see what happens.
Yeah, and his game is pretty mature. You saw that he was the captain of the Junior Tall Blacks team that went over to Fiji and won the Oceania Championship. He's been obviously training pretty much every day through the off season, being pushed along by the local guys with Alapati coming back and then Marcus Whippy still in town, and you know, working every day with Mark Dickel and the young guys that they have down in Canterbury. Quinn is He's a smart head, knows the game very well, and I'm excited to see what he can do this season too. It's always awesome. Like you say, it's always awesome seeing these young guys play big minutes. And I guess the question is whether he can really handle these sort of 10 minutes a game of backup guard play that they're going to require from that spot.
If someone goes down, he could even have the Jackson Stubbins effect from last season, where he ends up playing 30 minutes a game and gets really thrown into the fire, and then we can see what he can do as a starter. There's the possibility of that happening in a one-off or two-off stretch at least.
Yeah, you've got to think so. Like, if Kendall goes down for a long stretch, they'll bring someone else in. But, yeah, I don't know. Things can happen. Guys get injured in warm-ups, and that might be a situation where, you see Quinn be thrust into a 20-minute game or something like that, which would be really interesting to see.
He played 44 minutes last season. His big games came against Wellington and Southland, where he played 12 minutes apiece against Wellington. He had back-to-back threes, which was kind of his big moment from last season. So there's certainly a lot of potential there.
One example of a young guy coming in and playing meaningful minutes was when Joe Cook-Green, the year of him doing his Achilles, as a year 13, was able to actually claim that number one wing spot off the bench. And I think there was a game or two where he played sort of 19 minutes and a game where he was able to score 14 points. I think Quinn, you know, if he's able to give you, you know, a slight step up on what Joe Cook-Green as a year 13 was able to give, then that's what they'll be hoping for from Quinn as a backup guard.
Was that when the Nuggets had Fergus Bevan-McCrimmon playing on the bench and they had to take him on a road trip because there were so many injuries, and Steve Robinson was getting 30 minutes a game? Like, those Nuggets teams, there weren't that many options, so Cook-Green got thrown into the fire and he did pretty well.
No, that was the year. This was the following year. That was the year that I think the Fergus Bevan-McCrimmon year was with Joe Cook-Green. I think he had a formal on or something like that. I think that's why Fergus got the hurry up on the way up to Nelson. So shout out to Fergus Bevan-McCrimmon, who we tried to put into the NBL podcast art, but his name is too long, just wasn't able to fit.
Yeah, you should have a look at the podcast art, because there's some real throwbacks in there. Have you actually seen what Jokic Green's doing at JUCO? It's quite depressing, really. He's only playing like 5 minutes a game because he went to the pretty much the best JUCO in the country. And it's kind of the Ty Winyard conundrum of you're at the best JUCO in the country or the best college in the country, but if you're not really playing, is it really worth it?
Yeah, that's kind of a frustrating thing to see with one of our best, guard prospects that we've had come through in recent times that he's not able to get any minutes. Hopefully he's still enjoying it over there. Hopefully he's still learning. But yeah, it would have been good to see Joe really rip it up at a different college.
And hopefully that college has enough prestige that it can be like Kentucky, and even if he's on the bench, he can still get that D1 scholarship. He was the premier shooting guard prospect, and now for a while that went to Hamish McDonald, who's going to be on the bench for Canterbury, or at least he'll be in the squad. He's moved down from Waikato, where he played for Hillcrest. He was kind of one of the main age group guys playing the shooting guard role for the junior Tall Blacks squads in the past. You've seen him at Mainland Eagles camps and down in Christchurch. How's he looking, and do you expect him to play much of a role on this team off the bench?
I mean, probably not. We're getting into sort of, it depends on whether Marcel's there or not. We're getting into eighth, ninth, 10th men. These guys aren't going to really play all that much. But Mark Dickell does like to give these guys production by committee where one guy won't play 10 minutes, he'll have two guys play 5 minutes or something like that. So, yeah, you might see Hamish McDonald get 5 minutes a game in spots, especially home games. So he's down in Christchurch to train with Dickell, learn off of him, compete head to head with Quinn all the time, in an attempt to get to be the best player you can be for that Junior World Championships. I believe in August or July after the NBL season finishes. So he'll be using this to really train and get some good quality competition. Yeah, he's an interesting prospect. Obviously, a very very good shooter. I'm excited to see whether his defense can really pick it up, as he's got a good frame to build upon. He's just got to get his body in really good shape and really work hard on that defensive end.
Do you know if he has any ambition to go to college?
I don't think so. I sort of asked as to I asked him why he was kind of in Christchurch. He just said, he's solely focused on that world championship.
A very interesting battle for, as always, if you get this far into the podcast, you might actually be interested in these battles we kind of joke about. But the battle for the young kid who gets taken on the road trip between Hamish McDonald and Josh Peterman, who you got?
I think I might have to throw Derek Albertson in the mix as well, a former Taranaki Mountaineer. And
I was going to ask about Derek Albertson, because really he's like been a starter in this league before for the years. He would probably be a 15-minute per game bench guy who can kind of swing to the two spot. Is he a real option to come off the bench? He hasn't been named in the initial squads released in the Christchurch press, but certainly he has more experience at this level, and he's good enough to play a decent role in this team if they want him to.
Yeah, I don't know how much basketball he's been playing. I think he's been lifting a lot of weights. So it'll be interesting to see if he can still get his arms above his head. His biceps might be too big to see if he can shoot the ball. He might be shooting air balls that go way, way over the rim. But yeah, if he's around, then it'll be a three-way competition, I think, to see who tours. I had heard Dickell kind of talk about Albertson being part of the group, so I'm not 100% sure, but he's certainly a name to keep an eye on. And they kind of all give you different things. Well, McDonald and Albertson kind of give you the same thing, but Peterman is completely different. He plays so much harder than anyone, really. He's just a bulldog defender. We'll pick you up full court. He's too young and too small to really to be a really good defender, but he's like that Norris Cole type that can go, there you go, Rod. There's one of our first cross-racial comparisons. Is he's that Norris Cole type that'll pick you up full court, will get into you and kind of just annoy you as you dribble the ball up the floor, and he'll play really, really hard for a 3 or 4 minute stint. I think McDonald has obviously got the highest upside of the group. I'd like to see McDonald get these trips away, but Dickell, I'm sure, will just take whoever he feels is going to give them the most.
So Peterman played 28 minutes last season. He was out of his depth. He only managed one shot in those 28 minutes, largely garbage time. He nearly had a 7 trillion. He'd spoiled it with a foul. For those of you who aren't aware what that is, you get a zero in every category, so you play 7 minutes and don't do anything. But that's because he was there for the learning experience. He had an option to go overseas, and he decided he'd rather get his degree at University of Canterbury, right?
Yeah, so he was kind of that community or junior college level with Shaun Nisbet and Taylor Britt and Richie Roger and those sorts of level of guys, he decided to stay at UC studying finance. Once again, a great guy, friend of the pod.
Before we talk about Marcel Jones, who's been the big cloud hanging over this, all our analysis so far, is there anyone else on the end of the bench who, we mentioned Derek Albertson, Inga Solafudi's probably not going to reappear. We have the comedic stylings of Bede Masters. Who do you see? Who are any locals who might pop up throughout the season?
Yeah, so you've got to think that with Karina out, they're kind of one big light. So does those minutes go to Angus McWilliam, one of the best prospects in the entire country, 6'10 guy out of Middleton Grange? Or does it go to Bede Masters, brother of Ethan Rusbatch, and just like a big body, but they were a little bit worried that he was going to pass the fitness test. It's going to be a tough competition, I think, between those two. I think I would love to see McWilliam get some minutes, and I think he can actually do some good stuff. He is probably the best big man prospect. Cullen McRae, obviously, but outside of Cullen McRae, he's probably the best big man prospect going around. Getting to see him in an NBL setting would be pretty good, and I think he could do a pretty good job if he tidies up all of his little quirks that get him into trouble on defense and on offense and just in general. He does have a tremendous body, though, and a very good skill set. So seeing McWilliam in an NBL setting would be pretty cool.
I thought you thought he was better than Cullen McRae.
Oh, I mean, maybe not. Like, I think as a and this is probably a pretty hot take, but I think as a prospect, possibly, but obviously Cullen McRae's 7'2" and weighs 100 and however many kgs he is, and is just a dominant post-up player, almost beat Rangitoto by himself and did an okay job did a pretty good job, really, in the Junior Tall Blacks game against Australia. So I do like McWilliam's future, and I think that McWilliam can possibly do a better job at this level than what McRae could, just because McRae is just so slow a foot. But yeah, I might have to revise that and have, you know, I think McRae did actually do sort of a better job than I did thought he did think he was going to be able to do. So maybe he's jumped above Angus McWilliam.
If you were Taranaki or the Hawks, would you try and lure Cullen McRae over there and give him some money? Oh, I'm not sure. We might have some NCAA violations if you give him some money to bus or drive over to the Naki or the Bay for some training. But without the Jets, like, he played for the Jets when he was about 15, I think. He's the type of guy who probably could be in the Quinn Clinton role, getting that experience at this level. Like, would it be worth one of those franchises who probably aren't going to have the most deep bench to give him a shot?
And that's the thing where you kind of, this is where you really miss out without an NBL team in these sort of centers. Josh Aitchison in Dunedin for the Otago Nuggets, guys like Cullen McRae for the Jets. These guys are missing out on opportunities. I think the example of sort of bringing a guy across was Logan Ellis for the Taranaki Mountaineers, and he did a good job. So I guess possibly if you do have a real hole at the backup big man spot, but there might be enough sort of young guys floating around that you don't want to bring them along.
Shout out to Rookie of the Year, Logan Ellis. Do you think we'll see any out of the blue guys? And we've got still some rosters to be named, but like we were talking about Richie Edwards at the start, could he show up in Super City to fix the perceived gap we think they may have on the wing? Could we see in future, this is what got me thinking of the topic, Cullen McRae's brother, Liam McRae, who used to play and now plays in D2, guys like that can come back. Once Yanni Wetzel finishes his college degree, he could be a really good NBL player. There's just tons of guys overseas who could come back and turn into really good NBL players, like Luke Aston did in the past, and Nata and Delaney were over there for a year and then they came back and bossed the NBL. Are there any guys on the tip of your tongue who could be surprise additions to some of these teams in the near future?
Not really that I can think of for this year. Possibly as we move a little bit further forward to the future, one thing I don't think we're going to get is the Isaac Fotu rumour where that year he came back and was going to play for the Hawks. I don't think we're going to get anybody of that magnitude, but, you know, we might get somebody who comes in and plays, is able to play 10 minutes a game after coming back. So it would be cool to see a NCAA guy come back after their season finishes, but I'm not 100% sure.
So I guess it's kind of like Mike Carina, who came back from Wright State. Like, even guys who, after they finished there 4 years. Like Wetzel was an example, good D2 school. He's winning like conference player of the year and stuff like that. He's a guy who come back. He played for Tall Blacks Select and did well. He's the type of guy who the NBL probably needs to get, guys who can't get a pro contract straight out of college, but can come back to the NBL and make their case to be a development player in the ANBL and try to build their career that way. If they still have aspirations of being a pro, all these guys going through the college level now, we'd like some of them to go on to the NBA and pro contracts, but if they can't do that, there's always the NBL to come back to. And I think that would really improve the league instead of what we've got at the moment. We've got a lot of young guys, a lot of old guys, and kind of no one in the 26, 27, 28 range.
Yeah, you've got to think that that's going to be the model that will happen once all these NCAA guys start coming back. So maybe that's 2 years away, maybe that's 1 year away, but I'm looking forward to seeing that happen.
Cloud of Marcel Jones, who hangs over all this analysis. Last season, he was the New Zealand MVP. He averaged 23 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, 2 assists, a steal and a block. He had some just outrageous stat lines. He shot 49% from the field, 37% from deep, 60% at the line. He kind of had a very Akeem Wright-like season almost. These statistics randomly remind me of Akeem Wright, but he was just great. He's been over here for years. It was his best season. He's the difference maker. I think without him, this team's probably fifth best side. With him, I think they're probably third or fourth.
I'm probably a little bit higher on the Rams. I guess I seem to do that every single year with mixed success. I think that Jones, obviously being the NZ MVP, he was that for a reason over quite a few reasonably solid candidates. They are pretty light on the wing without Jones. Him being there makes him very strong on the wing with two of the best NZ players going around playing that 2 and 3 spot. He gives you versatility to play the 4. It solves some of their rebounding issues, gives you more shot creation. He's just sort of a perfect fit into the team, which kind of makes me think that they have been building the team with him in mind more than anything.
He has the value of getting the guys who are technically local. It's like Ty Wesley, where you get these guys and it turns out that they're local. And that links back to our last podcast with the Nelson Giants, who we talked about Curtis Washington the whole time as an import. Turns out he's from Guam, or he has Guam heritage, and they can play him as a local and go get an import to solve, pretty much push those bench worries down a notch, get an import to play the 2 or the 3, maybe move Sam Dempster to a very versatile 30-minute-a-game six-man role, and that would push the Giants into the Rams conversation is kind of a team in or out of the playoffs potentially. And instead, it must be their budget, but they clearly don't have enough money. They don't want to utilize that loophole just yet.
Yeah, that's certainly a point to consider. And it does put a cap on what the Giants are able to do. With the Rams, I think the Rams are very likely to make the playoffs if Jones is there. Without them, I think they're still favored to be a playoff side. I just think they've got enough depth and enough star quality, especially with, I think Jeremy Kendall is going to be a real star. So as a general overview, if we want to get into that right now, I think that the Rams sort of, with Jones, have an upside of maybe 13-5 and a downside of, with Jones, 9-9 or 8-10, something like that. Without Jones, the downside probably falls down to sort of the 6-win range and the upside is in that 11 or 12-win range. But yeah, I think that they should probably be favored to make the playoffs even without Marcel there.
I think you're spot on. I kind of forgotten about that only 3 teams missed the playoffs. And if we peg the Giants in last time as a team, we'll probably miss the playoffs. That leaves the Ears, who will probably be similar to last season, maybe slightly worse. You've got the Hawks, who we don't really know about, and the Rangers, who at this stage we expect them to have enough money to make the playoffs, but they always seem to push it pretty close of late. And then the Saints and the Sharks will be locks. And then you've probably got the Rams, the Hawks, the Ears, pretty much everyone else who's at least got some small semblance of fighting for those other 2 playoff spots in the year. From what we know at the moment, assuming the Hawks don't completely load up, which they could, I'd probably have the Rams, maybe more than not, to make the playoffs at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably spot on. That they are at least in a tier with the Hawks, if not above them. So, yeah, you would have to think that they are favoured to make the playoffs.
development player chat. Give us some analysis. We've already gone through a lot of prospects. Who on earth else is there?
This one's an interesting one. I'm going to go with Max Darling, a kid out of Nelson College. Has made the move down to Christchurch to go play with Mark Dickle at Christ's College in Canterbury. So he's a kid, I believe, who is West Indian heritage or something of that nature. And he's a sort of 6'4", I think, with a seven-foot wingspan. So very long, had the same standing vert as Zach LaVine from the NBA Combine in his Mainland Eagles Combine at roughly 33 inches. Pretty close to being able to touch the top of the backboard with a running jump, blocks some of the craziest shots you'll ever see, dunks some of the craziest balls you'll ever see, puts people on posters, has a long way to go in terms of being a guard player, which may possibly be his future due to only being 6'4", but Mark Dickle's a guy that you want to learn off in terms of the ability to dribble. His shot is very broken. It's going to take him a long time to get there, but if he is able to get there, then he's going to be something special. Just his athleticism is just completely off the charts, and when he plays hard, he's a wrecking ball on both ends and unbelievable in transition. So I'm excited to see what Max is able to do. He's a real wild card in terms of future ranges. Like, he could completely flame out, or he could be, you know, one of the best prospects in the country this year. It just wholly depends on how much he buys in and how much his jumper is able to develop and how much his ball handling is able to develop. So, yeah, Max Darling is a super intriguing prospect that I think we should all kind of keep an eye on.
So thank you for listening to the third edition of the Classic NBL podcast. Next up, we're going to have the only other team who has really solidified their roster so far, the Taranaki Mountaineers. And we should have a special guest. I'm planning to interview new head coach, Trent Adam. We'll get him on to discuss all about the Ayers roster and their new imports. And they're much like the Rams, they have a lot of roster overhaul there. So it'll be an interesting season for the Ayers, and I'm sure it'll be good to have some far more expert analysis than what we provide from Trent, who is a very analytical coach, and he's knows a lot of details about a lot of stuff. So we may even be able to quiz him on some other stuff going around the league. But that'll do us for the third edition of the podcast, and hopefully next week we'll have the Ayers, and then before the season starts, I believe on March 16, we should have all the previews done and dusted. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you in a few days.